Okay, everybody. Hello. Welcome. As always, happy to see you here, or to see your names here, in any event. I'm going to begin as I have started to do over the last few meetings like this with reading a couple of emails that I've received in recent times and responding to them here. You know, it's kind of a spiritual cliche to say that, you know, the idea that there is only one question. This is a kind of a cliche in the spiritual community, and it started out as an articulation of a momentary insight that was clear and startling and useful to people over time. But my sense of it is that it's more that there are many, many questions. There are infinite questions, but really there's only one answer. And that's the truth of it. So, which isn't to say that for the one who is harboring a burning question about reality or the relationship to it or what can be done to realize freedom and so forth, it's not to say that that question is not unique and individual to the experience of the person who is uttering it. It's not to say that it's the same question. It's not the same question, but there's going to be the same answer. So I'd like to be able to, over time, be able to answer as many of these questions that I receive as possible in a public forum, so that perhaps when you hear the questions here, they will resonate with your own belief that you are confused and something will be seen by you. So, enough of that. Onward and upward. Alan Z. This is a... Hi, John. Just a quick question. How mandatory is a sentient diet for self-inquiry? Ramana speaks of it as an aid, the most beneficial aid. Well, I'm not sure. I guess what you... I'm not sure what you mean by a sentient diet. I think Ramana spoke of a vegetarian diet. I'm not 100% sure. I remember having read that and wondered what in the world he could possibly be talking about. But actually, to call it a sentient diet might be closer to the truth, because it's my own experience. I only speak to you from my own experience. It's my own experience that the one state of mind, the one characteristic that may be helpful in the inquiry is a kind of continuous mindfulness, which certainly includes mindfulness as to what you're taking into your body, not mindfulness in the sense of analyzing it and determining whether it is beneficial to your spiritual life or not beneficial to your spiritual life, but mindfulness and just being aware of how you feel, what your body is like. And that mindfulness serves you always. It's the only, so far as I know, it is the only characteristic of the mind that is beneficial and helpful. And, of course, I could be making that up, too. For me, it's not for me, for this body, for this experience here. I have found, for example, that I feel better when I don't eat mammals. But that's just me. The mindfulness is the thing. The mindfulness and just that. Mindfulness says it all. It takes care of all of it in the end. Okay, here's an email that is seems to have a different tone to it. Dear John, I came to see you on Sunday and I heard you say to a couple people who'd recently had some awakening experiences something like, we've been working together a long time. How long? Since November? This is quoting me, of course. Indeed, 4 months had already passed. Well, I've been working here with you since 2002 or 2003. I stopped asking questions in satsang in 2006. I did have the essential experiences, Gangaji says, somewhere in there, but since then it feels like I'm stuck. I hate the people I'm with half the time. I'm full of resentment. I judge myself and others. The works, suffering, in other words. All I hear on the podcasts are people calling to report all the light they're seeing. All caps. What is taking me so long? Maybe some of us have too much trauma to unhook from. Maybe inquiring what my beingness feels like will work just before death. Anyway, most of the time I'm too stuck to inquire. I can't feel anything except the usual thoughts of suffering. I ask because you said you guarantee the sun will rise, so to speak. I don't want to wait till just before death for that. Can I have the alternative plan if there is one? Does the guarantee have exceptions? The guarantee has no exceptions. And truth has no exceptions. Truth has nothing excluded. That's you, the truth. I'm going to read the next letter. I'm going to read the next few couple of letters and then respond to all of them at the same time. The next one is this. John, I find that I am at the end of my rope. I've tried everything over the past 6 years to finally be done with suffering and live this awareness that we naturally are. I am always aware of this silence, but the me is also very much here. I see the silence and gaze into it, but there has been a growing terror and panic that has come to the surface, and for the past 2 years I've been plagued by it. My heart speeds up, my arms tingle, and I'm afraid I'm going to hurt my body through experiencing all this stress. I try looking into and just experiencing the fear and maybe find a bit of short-lived relief. I look at myself as you suggest, but the fear continues. This has been going on for a long time, and I wonder how much longer my body will hang in there. Another teacher has told me that there's nothing that can be done at this stage in the game. When the identification with the me is ready to dissolve, it will do it in its own time. It's so hard for me to know what's needed, and doubt arises when I see myself suffering more and more. You've said over and over again to simply look at myself. It feels so easy at times, but I've been finding lately that my life has been getting smaller and smaller as this terror arises almost everywhere. I refuse to let this stop me from living my life fully. Will it pass on its own, John? Could you please give me any thoughts about this when you get a chance? And one more. I have a question. I constantly return to a very deep sense of peace. It is there hiding under all my actions in this life. My life and circumstances seem to take attention from it, but when I stop and see, that is, look, there it is. Is this what you were pointing to? Is this me? It feels as if this peace comes and goes, and as such it would not be me, but something is telling me that it never goes. I just lose sight of it, ignore it, in order to take part in this world dream fantasy. These first two letters, the letters that are shot through with agony and confusion and so forth. These first two letters, it is as I said. It is not the case that everybody's experience is the same. It is not the case that the experience of suffering even between these two people is the same. They have these questions, these doubts, these why is it taking me so long? Do I have too much trauma? Do I have to wait for death? I am, and on the one, and then the other, the panic, the terror, the terror, the bodily sensation of fear, the consistent presence of fear, all of that. There are two very different reports and two very different experiences of the agony and terror and suffering of believing oneself to be trapped in these lives, in these bodies and minds, and so forth. But the answer is the same. The answer is always the same. The only thing that can help, the only thing that works, is to consistently, over as long a period as it takes, whether that be a day and a half or a year and a half or 15 years or however long, to consistently and repeatedly move your conscious attention looking for the certainty of being that you are. Because that's what you are. You are the certainty of being. Now there's nothing concrete, there's nothing tangible about this certainty of being. That it is there is self-evidently true. And that it is you is self-evidently true. But even that, the fact that it is your own identity, your own home, your own heart, even that is an unnecessary interpretation. All that's required is that you look there. And that all that's required to look there is that you try with all your heart to look there. It cannot fail. Now, the fact is that in my own experience, in my own case, many of these reports that come to me, the report of the having lost the experience, having been feeling stuck, hating people, hating, resenting the fact that, resenting everything, all of these experiences, the terror, all of that, I am familiar with in my own life, in my own journey. And what I would like to be able to do, what my work is, to the extent that I can describe it, what I want to be able to do is to be able to somehow speak to you, to the one that is feeling just fine, to the one that is suffering in doubt and confusion, to the one that is lost in terror and fear. I would like to be able to find some way to take your hand or to take your eye and show you directly what it is that I want you to look at. Because the only misunderstanding comes from my inability to tell you what it is that I want you to look at. And that's been the case, I have to say, in my own defense, for everyone that has tried this, for all of human history. But that's the problem. That's the problem that's the problem of the relationship between me and you, wherever you are, wherever this sense of conviction that you are trapped in this life is located. And all I want to do is to make you look, to show you directly, like without any possibility of misunderstanding, to, as I said, take you by the hand and put your hand on it or direct your eyes to it, to this that I want you to look at, because the only answer to all of these questions, the only answer to all of the misery and suffering in humanity whatsoever is precisely to look at that light. And through no credit to me, it is the case that in the time that we have been doing this work together, that many of us have, despite my inability, my ineffectiveness at showing you what I want you to look at, many of us have happened upon it and report that it is just as we have said. Just as we have said. Always, always you are here. Always you are aware of yourself. Always. Always you are seeing yourself. Never is there a moment when you actually are deluded by this belief that you are trapped in these lives. And the only thing that produces that is the continuation of that belief and the movement of mind and the movement of life in alignment with that belief. Because everything we do, all of our suffering and all of our aggression and all of our hatred and all of our self-love and all of our selfishness, all of that is entirely rational and reasonable if it is true, if it is true that I am trapped in this life, that I am at stake in this life. So the only answer is that. The only answer is to find a way to bring into these minds the light of reality that destroys all belief about what you are and what you are not. It destroys all grounds and basis for aggression and hostility and hatred along with that belief. So I keep trying, you know, I keep trying to find a better way or a new way because we, you know, we kind of get used to the old way, that like the thing with there's only one question. At one time that was a illuminating insight that really, really showed something to people. But we have been saying that for so many thousands of years that it is canonical and liturgical only. And closer to the truth is that there's only one answer. And the answer is to bring that light into your mind by looking at it. Now, since I am obviously not as good as I would like to be at showing you what it is I want you to look at, that means that you have to use your own inherent native intelligence and common sense to see that I am really telling you that what I want you to look at is yourself, is the feeling of being present, is the presence itself, is the spaciousness that you are. And then try to get through those words somehow. Because it is really true that all that's required is that the light be let in. It really is. And that guarantee has no exception. None. And it's really true that in the course of enacting this inquiry, because we are, it's hard to do, it seems, you know, when you start from a lifetime of being totally immersed and trapped in a conviction that you're trapped in this life, it's hard. But you can find it. You can see yourself. The only thing really that stands in the way is the fact that you are always seeing yourself. It's nothing new. There's nothing new to be found here. I'm going to read one more email to illustrate what it is that I'm saying well, let me read the email and then I'll talk about it. Hello, John. Long time since I've written you. The psychosomatic pain that I think comes from my very early preconscious stuff, animal distress more than a human experience, has pretty much possessed me, as I have, of course, continued and even intensified the practice. However, things are clear now, and confidence increases. What triggers this communication now is that I was very thrilled to hear you in the last world meeting speak of space and spaciousness. This was most synchronistic for me. You see, I have been somewhat plagued by your always saying, see yourself. I think because of my rather unusual initiation into life, I never developed the normal sense of self people have. In this, I may well have been close to autistic, or perhaps what is called borderline, meaning, I think, crazy but able to pass as a normal neurotic. So a few weeks ago, I decided that I would direct myself mentally to the practice by simply being aware of space, the space around my body or in my mind or whatever, simply space. The practice is, of course, just the same, but this helped me to stop hassling in my mind about what the hell does he mean? Look at yourself. I don't have one. Am I maybe excluded from this way? Just screwed, etc., etc.? So hearing you talk about space seemed to remove some sense of separation. And when I discovered I could go directly to what you instruct by the thought or the sense really of space, I quickly wrote a short writing about space to confirm in my mind this intuition and to share it with anyone it might possibly be of use to, so I'm attaching it for you. And there's no way I can express the depth and vastness of my gratitude to you and to how you reach me and so many others, but I'm sure you know. I didn't print the poem or the writing. I haven't had time, but I probably will put it on the website if you want to go and see it. This thing about space and spaciousness, I did talk about that last time, and I want to talk about it again a little right now. I'm not going to take forever in this, but I want to talk about it a little now. I want to use it first as a... You see, if you see what I am trying to do, then you can help me. And that's my purpose in telling you what I'm trying to do and how I'm trying to do it. So the reason I spoke about space last week was because it had been present with me for some time about the power and the sweetness of a Buddhist meditation practice on space and how much a metaphor this space that is a part of this Buddhist meditation practice, how much a metaphor it is precisely for what it is that I am trying to get you to look at. And not to say that many of you are not looking at it. So, and this is because of my own experience, as everything I speak to you, it flows directly from my own experience. And I found in the depths of my suffering and confusion during the 2 years of my spiritual journey, I found that some of the things that I learned from the Buddhists were quite helpful to me in retrospect, not so much in the moment, but in retrospect, quite helpful to me. One is the meditation on the mindfulness meditation that I speak of from time to time. Now, there's no direct correlation or even a direct metaphorical correlation between mindfulness meditation and self-inquiry, but nevertheless, it's quite useful, like sentient eating. It's quite useful to be mindful, to see that you are aware of everything at all times. Basically, that's what mindfulness is. And likewise, the meditation that I learned from the Buddhists, and I have to say, I say that these are practices that I learned from the Buddhists, but I have never had, at any time in this journey, and this is a confession, I guess, I have never had the direct, overt guidance by a teacher in anything, not including in these Buddhist meditation practices. All that I have done in the entire time that I have been in this wonder is use what little native intelligence is present here and what really small amount of common sense is present here, to try to see. You see, when I happened upon Ramana, when I fell into Ramana, I saw his insight very clearly, but I could not, for the life of me, articulate it even to myself. And being unable to articulate it even to myself, I found it very difficult to figure out, just like you, what it was that I was supposed to be doing. So the application of, as I said, what little intelligence and common sense that were present here at that time, and using what tools I had, which were little dibs and dabs of Buddhist meditation practices and a whole lot of spiritual reading, I took it upon myself as my purpose to see what in the world Ramana was talking about. Because he couldn't say it any better than I can, and he was saying it to people like a long time ago in a whole different cultural circumstance, but I could see the insight. The insight that the cause of all the trouble is this false conviction that I am trapped in this life. So one of the meditation practices that I found quite useful was this practice on meditating on space and spaciousness, which I say is Buddhist, but it's just me, my tinkering with what little I understood about from reading about a Buddhist practice. But it's like this. It's kind of like the email was saying. It's like this. As we sit here, as you sit wherever you are, in front of the computer or whatever you're doing, as you sit here, it is possible to, even as you listen to me, it is possible for you to become aware of the space that which everything occupies. Not the distance between things, not the separation of things from each other, but the space that contains everything. So that the same space contains the distance between you and your computer and the air that fills that distance, as contains the hard metal and plastic components of your computer. The same space. The same space that contains this body. This body is not the space that the body fills. It is possible to actually, at any time, the same space that these sounds that come to your ear fill. And it's possible to just relax and see the awareness of space, of spaciousness. Now that spaciousness itself is a phenomenon that appears within you in the same way or in a similar way to the way you, your body, appears within it, space. That spaciousness is a metaphor for the essential quality that you're looking for when you're looking for this that never leaves, this that never moves or changes. And doesn't matter, it really doesn't matter what you think you're doing, if you can bring your attention just to that, the space, the presence, the unmoving reality. That is the light. And without changing your mind about anything at all in the universe, about the nature of things, about the nature of reality, about heaven and hell, about anything at all, without changing your mind about anything, without even fixing or correcting your personality, without any of that at all, the repeated contact with that reality destroys the conviction that you are trapped in this life, in this body, in this mind. And that's the only problem there is. And that's the only answer, no matter what the question. And that's what I'm here for. So, I'm done. I'd like to speak with anybody who wants to speak with me here, but I want to say that instead of speaking to each other about our gratitude, because I tell you that your gratitude is self-evident. It is the gratitude and the generosity of everybody who has been touched by this offer, that makes the continued presentation of the offer possible. Carla and I live in your gratitude and your generosity. So if you don't ask to speak to me, I'm going to assume that you're filled with gratitude, like I am. But maybe we could, unless nobody has any problems that they whatsoever, or questions or confusions whatsoever, it might be better if we didn't talk about how grateful we are. Instead, we let this time for anybody who is confused or unhappy. Okay? So take your time. I'm just going to sit here and be quiet, waiting for you. I'm so happy to be with you.
Tal is calling from Jerusalem, Israel.
Hi, Tal.
Hi, John. I would like to ask you, I feel quite in prison in this life. I'm doing the investigation and I see the truth sometimes, but I don't feel the bliss I had before in my meditations, and I always have these expectations to be happy, to get something from this investigation, and I just feel more and more depressed, desperate, as long as I continue this investigation and trapped in this body. And what do you suggest to do with all these bad feelings?
Well, first of all, the bliss obviously came and went. And now it's replaced with what you described, with desperation and misery and suffering, which also has appeared and you must know will disappear. The fact that it will disappear, of course, is thin compensation for the experience itself, which is intense and ever-present, and not really ever-present, but seems like it is. While this is happening, while the pain and the misery are happening, while the bliss was happening, in all of these cases, right now, as I speak to you, and as whatever internal emotional movements are present in your body and your mind, the sense of feeling trapped in the life, you know, that experience itself, the sense of feeling trapped in the life, that experience itself is not what we call it, right? Like, we learn that in certain circumstances this energetic quality is desperation and hopelessness and fearfulness and so forth. But in fact, that's just our interpretation, our narrative interpretation of the ebb and flow of energetic activity within the life. But that too, even understanding that, is quite possible to philosophically understand that what I said is true, and it will in no way make the desire to be rid of this horrible misery more less intense. But since there is nothing you can do about it, I mean, if there was something you could do about it, you would have done it by now. If there was something that any of us in these lives of travail could do about the travail of these lives, we would have done so, because God knows we've been trying with all our hearts for as long as we've been keeping track of the things we've been trying with all our hearts to fix ourselves, to do something about the feeling of being trapped, to do something about the desperation and the hopelessness of life, the futility of it, and so forth. So if there was anything we could do to make those experiences go away, or even to make those stories about the experiences go away, by now we'd have figured out how to do it. And we haven't. But the clue here is the intensity of the sense of being trapped in this life. Because the sense of being trapped in this life isn't caused by anything. It is its own cause. And the sense of being trapped in this life is precisely the gross expression of the invisible belief that I am trapped in this life. It's not the belief itself. It's the consequence of that belief. It's one of the consequences of that belief. Now, so as always, the only thing that can be done is to rid yourself of that belief, not to rid yourself of that expression of that belief, but to rid yourself of that belief. And when the expression of that belief is intense and strong, it is absolutely possible for you, despite the nastiness of it, it's quite possible for you to see whether it is not so that this presence, this space, this spaciousness is untouched. To see for yourself whether that's true, that this presence, this underlying reality, is the same. And the point of that is not in order to convince you that it is the same, because in some way, you know, knowing that that's the same will heal the wounds of your psyche and your body, but because looking at it brings the light in. And the light, you can't see the belief, but the light destroys it. And gradually what you are now referring to as the sense of being trapped in the life will reveal itself to be something different, or will change, or will go away, or will not be a problem, this sense of being trapped in the life. So what you can do is to one of two things. Either look for the unmoving, ever-present reality in which the sense of being trapped and at stake in this life appears and disappears, in which bliss appears and disappears. Or look and see if you cannot find the one who is trapped in this life. Because trying to find the one who is trapped in this life will reveal nothing except this reality in which the idea appears and disappears. In all cases, what you can do whenever pain and suffering, I'm not talking about the pain of physical disease, but pain and suffering appear in your mind and in your life, what you can do is in the moment you see that that's the case, look and see if you are not still here and that that being here is not still the same. Just so you can just look at it. Just look at that underlying eternal reality. Just look at it. Just for a second. And it's not gonna instantaneously destroy the experience of misery and confusion and so forth. It's not gonna do that. But it will over time eradicate that belief that is the wellspring of that whole energetic business. I don't know what else to say. Is that helpful at all?
Yes, it is helpful, as usual. You always say the right things. So I will take your advice.
Very good news. Thank you very much, Tal. Anybody else?
Tom is calling from England.
Hi, Tom.
Hello, John. How are you doing?
Very, very well. And you?
I'm not too bad, thank you. Yeah, I was just ringing to ask, you always say just to look at ourselves whenever it comes to us to do so. But I wondered if you're actually thinking that, you know, as long as we start doing it like that, eventually we will do it all the time. And I'm wondering if it has to become an act that we do a lot more often than just every now and again for it to actually get rid of this false belief.
Well, that's a good question, actually. And I have to tell you that here's the actual fact of the matter. Already, always, we are looking at ourselves. Already, always. Already, always, we are aware of what we are. Now, once this conscious process begins and that awareness is seen, I'm using spiritual words, aren't I? Once this process begins and that awareness is seen, it's my experience, every day I get new emails confirming this with other people. It's my experience that it kind of takes you. And it's the time that these things take to manifest are entirely idiosyncratic. But the fact that if you start doing this, it will start doing itself is a universal report of everybody who's had experience with it. And the actual fact of the matter is that in the end, you see that there is no time when you are not looking at yourself. And the fact is that there is nothing you are looking at that is not yourself. But that's another story. But yes, so yes, you can expect that as time goes on, this inquiry, this self-seeing will become automatic and more frequent, not necessarily more intense, but more frequent, because intensity really isn't required. Intensity is just one of the things we do to enjoy ourselves. But it will take over, it will become more frequent, and until there's nothing but that, as has always been the case. Do you hear that?
Yeah, I look forward to it as well. I had another question. I know you hate these kind of questions, kind of besides the point, like you say, but I'm interested anyway. Once you finally got rid of this false belief, is it the case to you now that whenever you're talking to someone, you're fully aware that you are talking to yourself?
As are you, Tom. As are you. The fact is that you or I or anyone else have never seen, heard, tasted, dreamed of, thought about, or anything else, anything but yourself, our self, I, which is you. And you will see that that has always been self-evidently true. It is very difficult to talk about these. The reason these things are beside the point is because it's impossible to say anything true and real about any of this. And they're very inviting to start talking about stuff. But, yes. There's nothing anywhere to be found but you. And that is self-evident to me.
And with you, I think in Hinduism it's called Leela, the for itself. Do you agree with that, that way of looking at it, that actually we brought this on ourselves on purpose for a game?
Well, you know, it's kind of funny. I heard you say, I believe in Hinduism it's called Leela. In Hinduism it's called Leela. And then I heard, do you hold that to be true after a long period of silence? But that's okay, because I think I understand the question. Here's the thing. Reality is, it's in the same way that there is an infinite range of questions that can be formulated and put together about why is this so, what does this happen, how can I do this? Does this mean that? Does this mean the other thing? Is suffering this or is suffering that? Just as there are an infinite range of questions, so too there is an infinite, if I can say so, an even infiniter range of ways of ineptly trying to describe the qualities and the characteristics of reality. Because you see, the Leela itself is only reality. The Leela itself is the face of reality. It's the endlessly upwelling, rising, energetic movement that is the face of you, the face of reality. The idea that we have brought this on ourselves in order to gain some boon or some good experience of finding ourselves again or any such thing is an entirely legitimate metaphorical expression of an insight that is common in reality. But there are many, many other equally legitimate and equally illegitimate methods of concocting a story and an interpretation and a narrative that satisfactorily says something about the qualities of reality, and none of them are true. What's possible is not to determine whether and to what extent these ancient teaching stories actually conform to reality. What's possible is perhaps partly as a result of having been inflamed by the reading of these teaching stories, what is possible is for you to see that there is no reality to see other than the simplicity of your presence, and that the face, the amazing manifestation of existence is incomprehensible and utterly simple, and that it's possible for you to see yourself face to face what all these stories are about, and then you will see what it was that they were trying to say, and you will see and laugh at how far short we have always fallen in the attempt to say anything true about Leela or about karma or about the absolute or about all is one, or about any of the other ways in which we have undertaken to say something real. But then you can see for yourself what it's all about. You already do see it. And you can see that you see it. And if you are so inclined, you can try to do better than all these other guys who have failed so miserably in the past. So, do I hold to that theory of things? Well, no, I don't really have a theory of things. I see how beautiful they all are. But I see you in all of it. I see nothing but you in all of it. And so do you. So, my prayer is that we will all see what everybody has been trying to say something about. And then we will all either, I don't know, shut up about it, or maybe sing hymns and write symphonies and paint paintings and poetry and so forth. But I'm more interested in the seeing than the understanding. I'm more interested in the seeing than the narrative. And I think you will be too. Is that helpful?
Yeah, thank you. And yeah, I am. I am very interested in this seeing. I've been doing it for a little while now, and I'm glad to say it's become quite playful recently. It used to be this real anxiety that I had to do this, and now it's, although I'm doing it often, it's just enjoyable to do it as well. So thanks a lot, John, and I'll let you talk to someone else.
Well, thank you, Tom, and it is great play. It's the greatest play. So, anybody else?
Julia is calling from Ashland, Oregon.
Hi, Julia. Well, if you're having difficulty, perhaps you could... is anybody else waiting? Well, just see if you can work it out then, and if you manage to find voice before we're done here, just speak up, okay? In the meantime, I'm just going to sit and be quiet.
Catherine calling from New Zealand.
Hi, Catherine.
It's been a while. It's always hard to remember how to do everything. It's so good that it's worked. I'm just wondering, I get reminded a lot to inquire, and whenever I do, this sort of enormous sort of self-consciousness comes about all around, you know, it's all around whether you're doing it right and what am I doing, and I guess I've been doing it a long time now, and that never seems to change that much. You know, that seems to be where a lot of my attention is. You know, it's just this circus going on around sort of a self-consciousness. But I did also wonder whether what's looking is what I'm looking for.
Well, yes. What's looking is what you're looking for. That's absolutely the case. I have to say also that it's interesting that you would describe what you see to be the problem is self-consciousness, since this is the actual goal of the self-inquiry, is precisely self-consciousness. Now, I do understand, you know, what you're referring to, however, when you say self-consciousness, but that very sense of vulnerability and openness and being actually on the edge where you don't know whether you're doing it right or you don't know whether you're doing it wrong. And that whole array of things. The actual reality of that experience is not the experience of a problem. It's not reality exactly, except insofar as everything is reality, but it is not the experience of a problem. personal apparatus, the mind and so forth, it only has a limited vocabulary with which to relate to arising experience. And that limited vocabulary is what makes it pretty much vacillate between I like this and I don't like this, because that's pretty much its only vocabulary, and then later it'll go on to elaborate and explain and describe and so forth. But in the absolute sense, of course, this appearance of the self-consciousness and the timidity and so forth that go along with it, from an absolute point of view, of course, this is itself beside the point, and nothing whatsoever needs to be done to do anything about it. And also, even within the relative standpoint of the experience of being human-hearted and in a human body, the actual experience that is being seen as a problem is actually quite lighthearted and simple and not so bad a metaphor itself for reality, which itself is lighthearted and utterly, utterly, utterly undefended. And so I guess what I'm saying is I don't see the problem in two ways, and the only thing to do is to do what you're doing. By which I mean to continue this heroic effort to look at yourself, to have the seeing of yourself. That's the only thing to be done. Nothing can stop you from that. You are here. And there is not even anything that needs to be done about what I say is a misinterpretation of these experiences. There's not even anything that needs to be done about the desire to get rid of them in the face of the certainty that comes from long experience that you can't. There's not anything that needs to be done about any of it, and there's not anything that needs to be stopped from being done. The only thing that's needed is to continue determination to be seeing yourself directly, absolutely directly. And do you hear that?
Yeah, I do, John. Just lately I've kind of been experimenting a lot more, probably because I keep getting that self-consciousness, and it's like sort of like the same response all the time. So I've sort of been experimenting with, well, when I'm reminded, even if I just turn my attention kind of inward, even if that's all I do, is to just go, well, even if I don't know what I'm doing, here I am, you know, and I've been reminded at least that. And,
Catherine, what has happened here is that you have discovered a skillful means, because all I am asking is that you look within. That's it. Just turn your attention 180 degrees from where it generally rests and look. Not to see anything, not to get anything, just to look. So that's actually quite good news, and it's actually quite confirming of the self-teaching nature of the desire to see oneself. Do you hear that?
Well, that's really confirming. Just because the mind comes up with, you know, that it's all a bit hopeless, but if this is the best I can do, so it's really good to hear you say that. And also what I've been doing is whatever it is that's looking, I've been attempting to look at it, which is very bizarre. You know, it's sort of like the mind doesn't know what the hell is going on, and neither do I, but it's just anything to kind of, you know, experiment with that.
Catherine, that's perfect. And so too, and let me, if I have failed to say this in the past, let me say it now. So too is that perfect for everybody. This is what I'm trying to say, mostly what I've been trying to say today, is the fact that there's only, you know, I can't do that. I can't directly put your hand on what it is that I want you to feel. I can only kind of, it's kind of like herding cats, which is an expression I heard sometime. I can only try to nudge you in that direction so that you, with your own innate intelligence and with your delightful willingness to experiment, will find the way home, will find the way to the light. You can't be denied, and that's the truth. So I'm very happy to hear all this, Catherine. And anything else?
Yeah, just from you saying that, you know, when you say to put, to sort of get the feel of it, it doesn't feel ever like I'm ever arriving anywhere or getting the feel of anything. It only feels like turning the attention around, but I never feel like it lands anywhere or anything really opens up. But that doesn't really matter at this point, does it?
It doesn't matter in the slightest. When I have said try to get the feel of it, it was because I'm you know, looking around trying to find some way to give everybody that I speak with some sense of what I'm talking about. It's so hard to do that because you are so ever-present. If you were missing or absent or hidden away in a corner somewhere, it would be much easier for me to tell you how to go and look for it. But so don't take, when I say get the feel of it, don't take that literally. All I'm ever trying to do is to help you and to give some guidance and direction to you, all of you, in finding this light, in seeing what it is that you are always seeing, in in seeing the desire to see what's real for yourself. So don't pay attention to the literal meaning of what I say when I talk about these things, okay?
But, John, you know, I'm, you know, from what you say, eventually there is something more beautiful than what I'm experiencing. I guess at the moment it's still dealing to the belief, isn't it? That because it's not, you know, there's nothing amazing or even, you know, beautiful happening. That's all I'm doing. But is that because that belief's still strongly in place, would you say?
Yes, precisely, because of the truth of the matter, you never see anything but beauty wherever you look. And that's my experience. So that the, you know, like what you are convinced is unbeautiful and despicable and needs to be, and it will be gone when I am all finished, like the self-consciousness or the confusion or the you know, whatever is going on in the mind. These things too are nothing but pure beauty. These things too are just arisings, the endless ebb and flow arising of the expression of reality. They are, we tell stories about them that flow from this conviction that we are subject to them and trapped in this life. So we tell stories about them like, oh, this is the self-consciousness that I dread, and I guess it'll go away, and I hope it'll get better. Or, oh, this is the confusion that I dread. Or, oh, this is the terror that I dread. But in truth, none of that is anything except stories about energetic movement that about which we know nothing, and which are in themselves only the endlessly arising expression of reality, the arising, endlessly arising face of reality. So, yes, the day will come when your belief in the stories that are rooted in the conviction that you are at stake in this life, when your belief in those stories will just not be there anymore. The stories may continue because they really do no harm, but your belief in them will just not be there anymore. And you will see all as it is, as you already always have seen all as it is. I know that's not helpful, but it's all I can say.
No, it's really helpful, because I can see that already some of the stories that were very, very dominant when I started this are really now stopping me. They're, I can see that things have moved along, and everything you've said has been very helpful. Thank you very much.
Oh, you're very welcome, Catherine. Thank you for coming forward. These conversations that we have here in these meetings are the heart and soul of inquiry. It is I considering and reflecting upon the reality that I am, and that I is the same whether I say you or me or I or they or we or them or us or any other pronoun. So I'm very grateful to you for your willingness to come and speak to me like this. So I think we're going to call this, bring this to a close now. I don't know about you guys, but I really like this meeting. I really like these gatherings in this venue, this online venue, the range of things that is available to us here. You see, I am no different than you. I am fed and watered from the same spring as you. I am I am you. So, thank you so much for coming and spending time with us and paying attention to all this. Thank you so much for your willingness, your generous support, your gratitude, your willingness to penetrate the cloud of words that I give to you, and get from that something that leads you home, something that leads you home to the light that you are, to the reality that you are. I am absolutely at your service, and I thank you, and I am grateful to you with every breath. We really can do this. We all really can do this. We do not need scripture, the liturgy, we can do this ourselves. We are this truth that we seek. We are, and we don't need to wait any longer, really. We have been trying to throw off what we imagine to be the debilitating cloak of ignorance for as long as we've been able to speak about these things. And we can see now what it's all about. We really can do this. There is no need for us to be crippled and stymied by philosophical understandings or philosophical confusion. There's no need for us to be at the mercy of boons dispensed by the those we imagine to be the dispenser of boons. No one can do this for us. No one. But we can. You are the light. You have always been the light. You are always here. You are never absent. You need not know that, but you can see that. Look at yourself. Have the seeing of yourself as often as you can. Have the seeing of the light. Have the seeing of the space. Have the seeing of whatever metaphor is useful to you in describing what you are. The presence. But you are here. And you know it. Nothing else is needed. Thank you for this time together. I will see you again as soon as possible. And in the meantime, please stay tuned because Carla has a few things that need to be said. Thank you for your time. Om Shanti.